It's just a minute or so after 9 o'clock at 88.9 FM, KUCI in Irvine. Or for this next hour of programming, the opinions and views expressed are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Good morning, it's time now for Talking Animals on KUCI.
Little goldfish in your bowl, I've dug you all day long. Yellow scales rising through the ceiling of my soul. Little bee sat on your flower, swinging in the breeze. Funny little merry horse, a buzzing through the leaves. Dee-da-dee-da-da, da-dee-da-da.
That's music from Roy Harper with a song called Goldfish as we ease into today's edition of Talking Animals on 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine and streaming live on the internet at KUCI.org. And the whole enterprise, the whole shebang, the whole enchilada, the whole nine yards is broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'll be with you till 10 o'clock this morning with our program that is devoted to all subjects in the animal kingdom. Right off the bat, before we do anything, I want to introduce Jim, who's our intern today. Jim, how are you?
Hi, Duncan. How are you?
Good, good. So you are training to become an on-air whiz here at good old KUCI?
Yeah, I'm actually really enjoying my experience here with you, as well as Serena, just earlier in the last hour.
Right, cool. All right, so you'll be with us all hour, and hopefully we'll get you involved in the animal news, and maybe we'll have a question or two for our guests later that we'll get into in a moment. So welcome, welcome, welcome. Meanwhile, those of you listening, I'd like to tell you for the next hour, you can reach us by phone, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And you can also, if you are the shy type or you're listening online and just rather do it that way, you can IM us by way of AOL Instant Messenger. The screen name is Talking Animals, except I just realized I am not actually going to sign on yet, so just doing that as we speak. And, of course, other less immediate ways to be in touch with us include emailing us at talkinganimals@aol.com and contacting us via our cool website, talkinganimals.net. So, those are all ways you can be in touch. But, again, the most immediate would be calling us, 949-824-5824, or IMing us at Talking Animals is the screen name. Okay, so let's see. Before we move on, I want to thank Serena Sharp for another sharp, if I may say that again, on purpose, stimulating smoking edition of the Serena Sharp Show. And meanwhile, here at Talking Animals, primarily we strive to learn about animals and animal issues from our guests, from news items, from your calls, from assorted other sources. But we're also here each week to celebrate animals through music, comedy, and other means. We aim for a spirited balance of those elements, as you can readily glean by visiting our nifty website. One more time, it's talkinganimals.net. Make no mistake, it's .net, where nearly every show we've ever broadcast is archived. And if you've seen those archives or you've listened to the show before, you know that the heart of the program is the interview we conduct each week with some notable inhabitant of some province of the animal world. Today, our guest is Kat Albrecht, a real-life pet detective, some would say the very first pet detective. She's also author of The Lost Pet Chronicles and founder of Pet Hunters International, which trains pet detectives and search dogs. So with all due respect to Ace Ventura, Kat really pioneered this field and is serious about it and is pleased to share her knowledge in a variety of ways, including the book The Trading Academy, which is offering a session, in fact, in Fresno, California, from July 17th through July 20th, and in other forums like chatting with us today. So there'll be much to discuss when Kat Albrecht joins us in a few minutes here on Talking Animals. Meanwhile, it's time for a weekly look of at items of interest in animal news. And I want to remind you the phone number to join us on the show with your own comments and questions about animals. Not only this week's animal news items, of course, but any other animal topic you care to discuss, announcements, maybe you are involved with a benefit or some sort of fundraiser for an animal-related group or something else notable, observations in the animal world, any news item you might have stumbled across, anything like that. I'll be most welcome. 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. So turning now to interesting and or important developments recently in animal news. Typically, these are local, regional, national, and occasionally international animal stories of note that seem important to spotlight. And with any luck, get your comments on. We'll certainly ask for Jim's comments when he has them along the way. And we also include, sometimes at least, announcements of upcoming events locally or otherwise that you should maybe consider penciling in on your calendar. So, having said all that, wait for it, talk turkey, as it were. All right, produced as always by the Talking Animals award-winning Rip and Read News Department, let's jump in. Probably topping the news this week in the animal world is that a new African monkey was discovered, which you would think would be hard-pressed to happen at this point. But anyways, a previously unknown monkey species has been found in the mountains of southern Tanzania. The animal is believed to be a critically endangered species with no more than perhaps 1,000 individuals remaining. The Highland Mangabe, as it is called, lives in the trees and is thought to be closely related to the baboon family. Full details of the discovery revealed on Thursday in the journal Science. Tom Batinsky was one of the first scientists to track down the secretive monkey. He said it was a great thrill to be the only second or third primatologist to see the animal. Quote, "Your mouth drops open and a big smile appears on your face," he told the BBC News website. "You say, wow." Dr. Budinsky was part of a U.S. research team visiting the Ndulu Forest Reserve to investigate sightings of the Sanje Mangabe, a rare cousin of the new species. Unbeknownst to them, a different team of researchers working a few hundred kilometers away in the southern highlands of Tanzania was also on the animal's trail. Quote, "These monkeys have probably been there for hundreds of thousands of years," said Dr. Budinsky. "But what are the chances of two independent projects finding the animal within a 10-month period?" And the story goes on from there. But that's, you don't find new species popping up too often, so that's kind of cool and notable. Also probably notable in a whole different way, I took this from Friday's LA Times, but it was actually Associated Press story. That last one was from the BBC website. This is Dateline Washington. Lawmakers voted Thursday to block a six-month-old law that allowed the government to sell wild horses in burros, with opponents of the law protesting that the animals were ending up in processing plants and on the tables of foreign restaurants. The 249-159 House vote would stop the Bureau of Land Management from using any money in a $26.2 billion bill funding next year's natural resources and arts programs to sell horses that roam public lands in western states. The measure overturns a provision in a spending bill passed in December that ended a 33-year-old policy protecting wild horses from sale or processing. The horses said Representative Nick Rahal from West Virginia, shouldn't be sold so they can, quote, end up on the menus of France, Belgium, and Japan. Other programs on the bill, which funds the Interior Department and Environmental Protection Agency, absorbed a 3% spending cut from this year's $27 billion budget. And it goes on from there, but let's see, there was something else. Oh, yeah, here, the House action on horses came as the Bureau of Land Management announced Thursday that it was resuming the sale of wild horses and burros, but with tougher restrictions against sales for slaughter. The agency last month temporarily halted sales after 41 horses were killed. The agency's revised contract requires that buyers agree that they will not knowingly purchase horses intending to resell, trade, or give the animals to a slaughterhouse. Any thoughts on that, Jim?
Well, I think we should do as much as we can to protect the animals and their rights.
There we go. That's my boy. That's what I like to hear. All right, moving to old... Again, an international thing. We're sort of back to Africa, as it turns out. This is from Nairobi, Kenya. I meant to get to this last week, but we ran out of time. Police arrested the suspected mother of an infant girl, dubbed Angel by hospital officials, who was abandoned in a Kenyan forest and reportedly rescued by a stray dog, officials said Thursday. The young woman, who acknowledged she was pregnant but claimed she miscarried, was arrested Wednesday night following a tip. The local police commander told the Associated Press. The woman lives in the neighborhood where Angel was found and was seen pregnant days before the child was discovered in a group of dogs. She claimed that she miscarried some weeks ago. Doctors believe the infant was about 2 weeks old when she was found Friday. Police plan to take the woman for a medical examination. We're in the middle of investigations. We don't have any other suspect at the moment. A government spokesman and others have expressed some skepticism about the story of the dog's role in saving the child, saying it was too good to be true. But many have been touched by reports of the rescue. The story continues to attract an outpouring of concern in Kenya, as well as abroad. And at the Kenyatta National Hospital, where Angel is being treated for exposure and an infection in her umbilical cord, 16 abandoned children are being cared for. The dog apparently found the baby wrapped in a plastic bag in the nearby Nagong Forest. And other neighbors who witnessed Mary Adahambo, and other neighbors who witnessed the baby's recovery in a litter of puppies. The dog, now called Savior, reportedly dragged the baby across a road and threw some barbed wire to a compound in the poor Nairobi neighborhood where puppies from two stray dogs were sheltering. So, that's the power of animals. That's what they can do. And sounds like that story is indeed verified as it unfolds there. So, time for our mid-animal news quiz. Jim, do you know how this works? It's a true-false question. And basically, the first person who calls in with the correct answer gets a prize.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, the prizes range from... We have the DVD from Triumph Insult Comic Dog. We've got various books, including one from Shirley MacLaine that was co-written by her dog. We've got another book, Meatless Meals for Working People. We've got CDs. We've got dog toys, cat collars, T-shirts. We got actually some Talking Animals merchandise that we can give away if you are the lucky winner. We got a Talking Animals T-shirt. We got Talking Animals sweatshirts. We got Talking Animals coffee mugs. And T-shirts from other animal organizations. So, the point is, if you're the first person to call in with the correct answer to this true-false question, really, you could just call in and guess an up to 50-50 chance of winning. You might have your choice of those prizes. So, with that in mind, keep those prizes in mind, because later when we play Name That Animal Tune at the end of the show, those same prizes would be available for the first winner, the first one to call in with the correct answer then. All right, so, here we go. True or false... Elephants, okay, and this is a total gimme. I really thought, okay, it's time to have a winner today. So, true or false, elephants are wonderful swimmers. True or false, 949-824-5824, 949-UCI-KUCI. And, again, if you were the first person to call in with the correct answer, then you could have your choice of those prizes. So, going to continue a little bit here with the animal news in the meantime. Let's see. I am going to present this without any comments. This is a little news brief from the LA Times as well. Headline, Manliest Fish Have a Blessing and a Curse? Larger male genitalia in some fish are more attractive to females, but they make the males more susceptible to predation. Yale researchers reported Friday in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, studying Western and Bahamas mosquito fish, species in which the males cannot retract their gonopoda. The team found that females preferred to watch videos of males with digitally enhanced genitalia. But laboratory experiments showed that males with larger organs were slower to escape predators through evasive swimming bursts, thus requiring a delicate balancing of size for survival. So, again, presenting that without comment. From that bastion of serious journalism, People Magazine, this is actually goes back a week or two, too, but there was a picture that accompanies this. So, picture Kelly Osbourne and some kind of wildly over-grinning, I guess, DJ, I don't know. And then the focus of this quick item, but let's just say that it is a English bulldog puppy that's pink. And the item itself reads, Animal lovers take note, Kelly Osbourne may have dyed her 14-week-old English bulldog puppy Piglet pink, but she insists that food coloring, quote, the same stuff used in cakes and cooking, did the trick. Piglet, she wrote on her website, is happy and safe. Again, 14-week-old English bulldog dyed pink. All right. Perhaps provide that one with that comment, although plenty of room for comment. And, Jim, if you have a comment, feel free to jump in at any time. We're in the home stretch of our Animal News segment here. But and let's see, a couple other things here. For sale, art by Congo the Chimp. Congo the chimpanzee had a brief artistic career and enjoyed little critical success, despite the patronage of his contemporary and fellow abstract painter, Pablo Picasso. But nearly 50 years later, three of his paintings are going on sale at prestigious London auction house Bonhams, alongside works by Andy Warhol and Renoir. The lot estimate is between $1,130 to $1,500. In 1957, animal behaviorist Desmond Morris organized an exhibition of chimpanzee art at London's Institute of Contemporary Arts, including works by Congo. Critics reacted with a mixture of scorn and skepticism, but Picasso is recorded as having owned a painting by Congo. So I think we're probably in the home stretch here, but let me just add, as we do periodically here, a little reminder about the Animal Rescue Site. That's a website that you can go to, and in fact should every day if you can. It's the animalrescuesite.com is the actual address, and once you go there, you can just click. There's a section that says Feed an Animal in Need, and essentially that's what you can do. And through an arrangement with the corporate sponsors and advertisers involved with that website, by going there and clicking on that, that indeed releases funds to feed or otherwise care for animals that have been abandoned, neglected in various shelters and sanctuaries. So it's pretty cool. It's the animalrescuesite.com, and you can do it every single day, as well you should. All right, I think that's going to conclude this edition of the Animal News. Any parting shots, comments, Jim, before we move on?
Well, I was wondering, was Osborne's dog actually pink? Was it pink?
Yeah, I mean, this won't help our listeners necessarily, but I will show you the picture right here. And it's not anybody's finest hour, if you ask me, but yeah. That's indeed dyed pink. So.
That's what people do for ratings now.
I guess, yeah. I'm not sure who that's helping, but anyway, we cover all the whole gamut of news here on the Animal News segment of Talking Animals. So, and of course, if there are any news stories or announcements or events you'd like to bring to our attention, you can email us those at talkinganimals@AOL.com. We'd also love to encourage you to email us with any comments about the show, suggestions of future guests, ideas about animal songs, comedy bits, any other animal topic that's on your mind you think we should be addressing, covering, etc. And again, it's talkinganimals@AOL.com. Also, I would like to remind you that perhaps redundantly, to visit our website. It's talkinganimals.net. We hope you'll check out the site. And again, it's .net, talkinganimals.net. And if you get there and sign up for the email list, we can keep you posted on upcoming guests and other announcements. You'll also find archives and synopses of all the shows, sort of photographs and articles, both that we've written and that have been written about us, all kinds of links, other audio pieces, and more. So please stop by and take a look around. The site, again, it's talkinganimals.net, and we're pretty well caught up through... not quite last week's, but everything else that we've ever done, including the recent interview with Triumph the Insult Comic Dog and many, many more, all on that website for your listening pleasure. So it's time now to step into the Talking Animals Comedy Corner, which, as always, of course, involves animal-oriented comedy. This is a vintage piece from a vintage comic, and we're going to do a little longer one today than we normally do. This is Bill Cosby with a piece called Froofy the Dog on today's Comedy Corner here. KUCI.
We got one TV set in this house that I'm in. One TV set. That's all my wife would allow. One TV set. She said, everybody will watch that one set. I said, okay, that's a wonderful thing. We will get rid of the 11 other sets. No, I had TV set everywhere, in the toilet, every place, man. I just watch games and everything, you know. But now we have one set. You have to go all the way down to the basement to watch it. Now, I'm going to show you how you can be intimidated by a child and the way they play the game. I'm watching Gunsmoke and enjoying it. Marshall Dillon, I'll rip your nose off if you try to lay it. Because they don't shoot, you know. I'll tear your liver out. Erica, the 7-year-old, comes up and says, They don't start with a word. It's always, Then they start tapping. See, now, tapping, you know, after you've been a parent for a while, you know, on the first tap, you say, yes, dear, what is it? See, but if you're a new parent, you just let them tap. See, but the kid don't even worry about that because they know how old you are. And they know how old they are, and they know they're going to live longer than you. So they just keep tapping, man. And finally you say, what is it? And they say, could I watch, Froofy the Dog?
No, I'm watching Gunsmoke.
Now that's enough! The father has spoken! No, I'm watching Gunsmoke. Now, to a grown-up, to a dog, to a German Shepherd coming up, could I watch Fruity the Dog? No, I'm watching Gunsmoke. The dog would say, okay, all right. But not a 7-year-old human being. Well, how long is this going to be on?
Until 7:30.
Well, that's the same time that Froofy the Dog goes off.
Tough.
I was here. Now I find myself arguing with somebody that I should just be able to say, get out of here. I am the father. See, I have shown my credentials now. I'm your father. Here. See this? I brought you into the world. I have a job. I pay for your clothing. If I just let you run out, you'd be a wild woman chasing cars, biting tires. No! Now, go on, Erica. Get out of here. I'm watching Gunsmoke. But, Aaron and I wanted to watch our Froofy the Dog. You're not watching Froofy the Dog because he's dead. Now, go play. Go bite your brother or something. Now, Slicko, man, I think it's all over. She goes to her mother. This is called playing one against the other. They learn this automatically. They don't go to school. There's no class for this. Automatically, there's somebody behind them.
Go talk to Mom.
Mother. Now, my wife is cooking. She don't want to be bothered. And that's good timing. Always grab the parent when they're busy doing something. They'll say yes for anything. Especially if they're cooking a cake or something like that. Something's got time. Erica, what is it? I don't have time.
Daddy won't let us watch our Froofy the dog.
Well, if Daddy's watching something, then he must watch what he wants to watch. There it is. Plus factor for me.
But he wanted Aaron and me to watch the Gunsmoke, and the men on Gunsmoke are drowning some little baby kittens. Now I'm watching Froofy the dog.
All right. It's Bill Cosby, of course, on today's Comedy Corner, with a piece called Froofy the Dog, taken from his album At His Best. The Comedy Corner is, of course, one of the signature features of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss, and you're indeed listening to Talking Animals on KUCI 88.9 FM, broadcasting from the University of California at Irvine. As many of you know, we also stream live on the internet at KUCI.org. Some of you, no doubt, are listening that very way. And some of you, perhaps, arrive through our swell website, TalkingAnimals.net. Before we proceed, I'm obliged to remind you that the opinions and views expressed on Talking Animals are not necessarily those of KUCI, UC Irvine, or the University of California Board of Regents. Earlier in the show, I mentioned that our guest today is Cat Albrecht, a real-life pet detective, some would say the very first pet detective, also author of The Lost Pet Chronicles, founder of Pet Hunters International, which trains pet detectives and search dogs, and with all due respect to Ace Ventura, Cat really pioneered this field and is obviously quite serious about it, and is pleased to share her knowledge in a variety of ways, including the book, the Training Academy, which is offering a session in Fresno, California, from July 17th through July 20th, and in other forums like chatting with us right now. So there's lots to discuss as we welcome Cat Albrecht to Talk Animals. Are you there, Cat?
Yes, I am. Hi, Duncan.
Hi, welcome to Talking Animals.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining us today. There really is a lot to cover here, though. I suspect we may want to focus ultimately on your work as a pet detective and the training in that area you provide. But first, though, let's take a quick tour of the Cat Albrecht story before you began your pioneering work as a pet detective. Let's go all the way back. In fact, maybe you came from a large family. Were animals kind of always important to you, or were you an animal lover from day one?
Yeah, you know, I mean, we always had a family dog, and I just really latched on to the idea of training dogs and fell in love after reading the book Big Red when I was a child, and was fascinated with hunting dogs, and it just kind of evolved into when I reached my early 20s after reading a magazine article about cadaver dogs, wanting to train a dog to find dead people, and my family thought I was nuts. But it was cadaver dogs were new back then, and I had a fascination and interest in law enforcement, and so it just kind of evolved into eventually my training and using search and rescue dogs, entering the police academy, and starting to train police bloodhounds to track people.
Yeah, maybe you could kind of guide us through that a little bit, the path of working as a police officer and sort of a aspiring canine handler, search team member, and then kind of how things unfolded from there.
Well, I got my first search dog was Rachel, a Weimaraner that I got as a puppy when I lived here in Fresno, and that was 1989. And again, I began training her in cadaver work. But then 2 years later, I read the book on police bloodhounds, and that really is what sparked me to enter the police academy here in Fresno. So in 1991, I was hired at the Reedley Police Department, which is a very small community outside of Fresno, and learned a lot about work in the streets and, you know, loved police work, but my real passion was and desire was to train a bloodhound to track criminals. But after working there for 18 months, they pretty much told me, bloodhounds have never been used here. They never will be used here. If you want to use your dog, you need to go somewhere else. So,
yeah, I was kind of struck by that reading the book. I mean, it just sounded so, I mean, almost proudly close-minded.
Absolutely. And, you know, we really didn't want to focus on that, because if we had, it probably would have sounded like sour grapes.
Yeah.
You know, I really didn't want to burn the people, and I felt like I handled it as diplomatically as possible.
Well,
but in
yeah,
a nutshell,
absolutely.
I mean, within the canine community, there just are egos and politics as there are in anything. And you know, I mean, thank goodness they finally were honest with me and told me that, you know, go away.
Right, yeah.
So I did.
It ain't going to happen here, Kat. Yeah,
yeah,
it's
a pipe dream. It is not going to happen.
Right.
So, you know, thank God, because what happened was I ended up applying for the UC Santa Cruz Police Department, working at the in the UC system as a campus cop. For a police department that originally they weren't sure whether they wanted to support a canine program, because it can be expensive, and obviously how many people or students get lost up on the campus, not very many, but they understood the fact that having my dogs available to other law enforcement agencies around Santa Cruz would be you know, a nice benefit that they could offer to other agencies, and as it worked out, that's what happened. The first search I used Rachel, my cadaver dog, on was a polyclass search, and then 2 months later, helped us solve a homicide case in recovering parts in a homicide, and then my bloodhound AJ went on to find an Alzheimer's patient and missing people, and it just kind of evolved from there.
And so how did it, I mean, what can you kind of just describe sort of how from those things the light bulb kind of went off about, hey, okay, this is really cool, and we're finding people and helping with other cases involving humans. I wonder how or if we could apply this to animals.
Yeah, you know, that happened by accident, and it really, you know, to this day it still surprises me, because, you know, I mean, I was a cop, and I loved being a cop, and my, you know, passion was to really work more dangerous criminal cases and to utilize bloodhounds as an investigative tool, not just to track missing people or trying to track down a person, but to reconstruct a crime scene, because scent is evidence, it's present at every crime scene, and a properly trained bloodhound can be utilized in that manner. I know in Orange County they have an absolutely awesome bloodhound unit down there, and they've been using them for many years, but it was very new and non-existent in the Fresno area.
Sure.
And so what happened was one day in 1996, my bloodhound AJ dug out and was missing. So suddenly, I was the panic pet owner,
right,
needing to find my dog. I mean, not only was he my dog and my pet, but, you know, goodness sakes, he had won a National Life Saving Award. He was a law enforcement tool. But, you know, the sheriff's department wouldn't come and help me look for my dog because he was just a dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I immediately got on the phone. I called my friend to bring out her golden retriever. It was a dog that I had helped to train to track people, and we had worked many cases together. And we scented that dog. Her name was Kea. We scented her on AJ's bedding, not knowing whether or not she would understand, you know, smell AJ's smell and find AJ. But she did. She found him in 20 minutes.
Incredible.
Yeah, and that's what gave me the idea. You know, I mean, I went home and I sat down. I thought, you know, I know how to train dogs to find people. Why aren't we training dogs to track lost pets? You know, we've got drug detection, bomb detection, melanoma detection, dogs that are detecting cancer cells. Why don't we have cat detection dogs? I never heard of it before.
Well, and like you said a moment ago, I mean, sometimes the coolest things are discovered by accident, and it sounds like that's a perfect description of this. But let me just let our listeners know, this is Talking Animals on KUCI. I'm Duncan Strauss, and I'm speaking with Kat Albrecht, author of The Lost Pet Chronicles, and a real-life pet detective who also trains people to become pet detectives themselves through her academy, Pet Hunters International, which, by the way, we want to mention now and a few other times, the website for that is pethunters.com. And if you'd like to join the conversation, have a question for Kat, please call us at 949-824-5824. So after that kind of a big sort of epiphany, really, of finding your own dog that way, then it was sort of just, you know, sort of marching down that path, right?
Well, yeah, it was like, you know, I wasn't planning on being the one to do this. In fact, I didn't want to do this. I put the idea out on the internet to a group of search and rescue dog people, and suddenly the normally chatty group went silent.
Yeah.
Kind of like Kat had lost her mind, you know. And the one person that did respond said, why would we waste our time? We know how long it takes to train a dog to find people. Why waste our time, you know, training one to find lost pets? And I thought to myself, because what happens when your search and rescue dog becomes lost?
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I had been through this, I knew what it was like. And,
sure.
But I didn't have the time. I was training a new bloodhound up, and so the idea haunted me for 6 months. And
mm-hmm.
finally, I just said, you know, I have to try this as an experiment. I went ahead and took Rachel because I had by that time I had stopped using her on cases. I just kind of retired her so I could focus on the bloodhounds. And I spent a couple months in training her to find cats and dogs. And her first four cases, she found two missing cats and two missing dogs. And you know, so the book really tells this whole story about that transition. And you know, it starts with some of those law enforcement cases, and then it flips over to my using Rachel on lost pet cases and the cases we solved, and we learned a lot.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, Kat. Really, it's clear that you were sort of discovering things each step of the way that, and sort of teaching yourself as you went, like drawing on your police detective background, how you could sort of extrapolate from that training and experience to marry that with your instincts and knowledge of animals, and pretty soon you were just sort of obviously in uncharted territory, but that's how you pioneered this thing, right?
Absolutely, and to this day we're still making discoveries, but it really was sitting down and saying, okay, wait a minute, I'm already trained and understand the science of finding missing people, because not only was I, you know, I mean, I was a campus cop, but I was a detective for 2 years, so I had that background in
mm-hmm.
training, and then I was also trained in search and rescue management, so I would oversee a search and rescue operation in the county of Santa Cruz, and understood been trained in the analysis of lost person behavior, deductive reasoning, search
mm-hmm.
probability theory. I mean, there's a science to finding missing people. You don't just send searchers to wander aimlessly in the woods to call a person's name. There's an organized plan, and there's research and strategies that are used. And I began to use those and began to study lost pet behavior and began to realize, oh my gosh, we have so missed the mark on this.
Yeah.
You know, we've developed veterinary medicine that has mirrored the medical treatment for humans, but we have done absolutely nothing to develop a science of finding missing pets. And so, you know, here I am. Even more incredible is it's been a real struggle, a financial struggle, physical, you know, problems. The death of my dogs, every kind of setback that continues to plague me even since the book has been published, but I refuse to give up.
Well, that's one of the really kind of almost subtext things that's cool about this, because even as we've noted now already twice, I mean, with the first police department where they're sort of saying, hey, you know, it just is never going to happen here with the dog thing, so if you want to do that, get out, basically. And also even with your own group of search people, when you had, you know, sort of first floated this idea of using animals to search for animals, it sounded like they were, you know, pretty much poo-pooing that, too. So, I mean, the fact that through all kinds of things, you really had to persevere.
Yeah, and, I really attribute a lot of that to my faith in God and just the fact that, you know, I know that this is what I've been called to do.
Mm-hmm.
And when I go on these cases, it's really, you know, I really love animals and I love my animals, and I've got such passion or compassion for the people who've and empathy for the people who've lost their pet. But I'm really out there to help the people.
Yeah.
Because they're grieving, they have no hope, they have no one to help them. I mean, you can pick up the phone and call someone to come and mow your lawn and clean your pool and you know, dog groomers and vets that are mobile veterinarians that come out to your home, and we offer so many services for our pets, but I'm appalled that we just haven't developed anything where professional resources can come out to your home and help you look for your lost pet. And so that's what Pet Hunters is about, is to train and certify missing animal response technicians to do that work.
Well, let's see. I want to get into more about that and the thing coming up in July as well in a moment. But let's just start with, maybe you can give us a few basic truisms of how to, or maybe more to the point, how not to search for missing pets. I mean, maybe contrasting cats and dogs, or just however you'd like to do it.
Yeah, cats and dogs, it's a good example. In fact, there's a difference between how you should search for a lost dog versus how you would look for an outdoor cat that suddenly vanishes from its territory versus an indoor-only cat that escapes outside. I mean, they're apples and oranges.
Mm-hmm.
The investigative question with a missing dog is, who has this dog? Because invariably, a dog is going to travel, and it's going to be picked up by somebody, and that person who picks up the dog is going to dictate what happens to it and whether it gets back to the owner.
Mm-hmm.
An outdoor cat that vanishes from its territory means something has happened to the cat to interrupt its behavior of coming home.
Mm-hmm.
It might be trapped, It could be injured, and the behavior of an injured, sick, or a panicked cat is that they hide in silence, mm-hmm. and usually within their territory or nearby. So that means something has happened, and you need to get in your neighbor's yards and crawl around on your belly to look under their house for your cat, because they're not going to do it for you. And then the difference between the indoor-only cat that escapes outside, that's a panicked cat that is going to look for the first place that it can hide, mm-hmm. and it will stay there, and it will not meow. And you can use a baited humane trap as a recovery tool to get your cat back, and we just need to get that message out to people.
You know, and it's so interesting, as I was reading the book, and at one point, more generally, you're talking about cats missing, and you're just saying, look, in many cases, they're really no more than a house or two away. I mean, everybody's kind of frantically going to shelters and posting things, flyers, et cetera, which are all good, but I couldn't help but think about a year or so ago, our cat Otis went missing, and we did all those things that you said, and meanwhile, I was patrolling the neighborhood, calling his name, and nothing happened, four or five, and you know, he's a guy, he's an older guy, he needs medication every day, so we're really starting to freak out, and we found him the next block over, so basically, really, within a house, just like your theory said, and for why he wasn't responding the first three or four days, I mean, three or four times a day, I was patrolling, calling his name, and finally I heard him respond.
Yeah, and that's called the threshold phenomenon, and a lot of cats, they won't respond. Sometimes it's between 3 to 4 days, sometimes it's not till 7 or 10 days. They don't meow. They'll be in the same spot, and they'll hear you, and they'll see you going by back and forth calling
yeah.
and pounding, you know, pounding on the tuna can with your spoon.
Right.
But they don't respond. It takes them, they need to get to a threshold where they're thirsty or hungry enough that they will meow or break cover or go into the humane trap.
Yeah,
that's quite common. So if your cat disappears, don't panic that you haven't found them within the first couple days, because it's very likely that they're still out there. But, and again, the concept of search probability theory is, yeah, there are some cats that are found a mile away from home, but you're going to have a higher success rate if you focus your search effort in the areas where they're most likely to be, which is in your neighbor's yards, hiding under your own home, because the last thing that you want is to be driving down to Kinko's to print up lost cat posters and driving across town to the shelter to look for your cat
mm-hmm.
when it's under your house or your neighbor's deck needing to get to a veterinarian and you just don't realize it's right there all along.
And along those lines, Kat, I mean, you made reference already to a humane trap. I mean, how important, because you also talk in the book and elsewhere about high-tech gear. I mean, how important is that gear relative to, say, a humane trap, which sounds like a really, really just kind of perhaps the most important arsenal component in a pet detective's arsenal is a basic humane trap.
Well, the humane trap is something you can do on your own. You know, the high-tech equipment, the amplified listening devices, the cat detection dogs, the scent trailing dogs, the use of search cameras are things that we're going to be certifying the pet detectives to come out and use. But,
mm-hmm.
but you know, it's going to take a while to get people trained and certified. Right now, we have nobody in Southern California trained to do this. I have one gal training a bloodhound, one gal in San Diego that's training another dog.
Yeah.
But they're not trained up yet, and we need to get people in the class in July, and this needs to be available. But in the meantime, you can use these humane traps. If you have a cat that becomes displaced, it's an awesome tool to use, to be able to, you can rent it from your local animal shelter oftentimes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an excellent website, our website for my nonprofit, Missing Pet Partnership, that's lostapet.org, has the tips and the information and links to other sites that tell you how to use these baited humane traps as a recovery tool.
And what would you say, just because I do want to kind of keep moving and get into those seminars and stuff too, but what would you say to folks whose reaction to some of this is something like, okay, I get dogs searching for dogs, but dogs searching for cats? You know, like, I mean, how does that work? When is that a problem? Or does the dog's training supersede any natural bent towards chasing, much less killing, cats?
Oh, yeah. First of all, the dogs that we use are always working in a harness on a leash, so we don't just let them go out and chase the cat.
Right.
Second of all, we're using the dog's nose and the dog's natural body language to alert us. Just like a drug dog or any other search and rescue dog will give a physical alert. In the cases of the dogs that we carefully select for this work, they're dogs that are going to start getting all wiggly and excited. One of the
mm-hmm.
We use a Jack Russell Terrier that her little stubby tail just starts going all over the place.
Mm.
When she finds a kitty, you know it. In fact, she worked a case just about 2 weeks ago where she found the missing cat in 5 minutes. You know.
Wow.
And so the dogs that we use are dogs that love to play with kitties. Actually, we train three different types of dogs. dogs that love to play with cats and give a physical reaction when they find a cat are the dogs that we train for cat detection work.
Mm-hmm.
Dogs that love to play with other dogs, kind of the dog park mentality, that they go crazy when we have another dog run away and hide around the corner and they're just, you know, hollering because they want to go and play with that other dog.
Sure.
We train those dogs to track the scent trail of lost dogs. And the third type are a dog that will do anything for a treat. We can clicker train those dogs
mm-hmm.
on a method where we teach them smell this smell, find this smell. So it can be smell the snake, find the snake, smell the turtle, find the turtle, smell the cat, find the cat. So three different types of dogs.
And so are those like a cross breeds? It sounds like those are more personality traits than
yes.
breeds particularly.
Does not matter
yeah.
on the breed. You know,
okay.
we're not going to train a Great Dane or a St. Bernard or a small Chihuahua.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have this information on the FAQ page on the pethunters.com that tells about the suggestions of what we look for, but we
yeah.
have mixed breeds in training. I've evaluated bloodhounds before that bombed out, that didn't pass. You know, we specifically look for the extreme intense desire and traits in drives in these dogs, and they cannot be aggressive towards humans, animals. They cannot have major fear issues, but if they possess any of these other intense interests in food, cats, or dogs, then we can pull them into the training program.
Cool. This is Talking Animals on KCR. We're speaking with Cat Albrecht, a real-life pet detective who can train you to become one if you'd like. Meanwhile, if you'd like to ask Cat a question, it's 949-824-5824. So, Cat, what would you say are like two or three of the most either odd or memorable cases in your time doing pet detective work?
One of the more strange ones was when we went in to Northern California to a zoo facility that had lost a giant boa constrictor, and they didn't want to alert the public that this big snake was loose
mm-hmm.
in their park, you know. So we kind of tried to do this as undercover, you know. And I show up in, but the back of my truck, I've got these big giant search and rescue stickers on the back that I couldn't take off. But I didn't wear my lost pet rescue vest, and
mm-hmm.
you know. And so I took Rachel out there, and I go up to the booth, and the security guard says, "Oh, search and rescue, huh?" But I was still trying to be undercover. I told him, "Yeah, can you just tell Miss Smith that Cat Albrecht is here to see her?" And I hear him go over the PA system. It goes over the entire park. "Miss Smith, the lady with the dog trained to find snakes is here." So much for being an undercover pet detective.
Right.
But anyway, so I had the Today Show fly me to New York City to look for a snake loose in an apartment complex. I've looked for missing horses, dogs, a gecko, a couple different types of turtles, a ferret, a lot of cats and dogs, and almost looked for George W. Bush's cat Ernie that was missing in Los Angeles. That it was a cat he had given to a friend that lived down there, but they didn't hear about us until too late. So I've just had my life is really weird.
Yeah,
it's fun.
Well, cool. Here's a caller. It looks like hi. Maybe they'll call back. They'll call back. What the heck? Well, that's quite an array, and it sounds like it just kind of continues. Although it sounds like also that you don't. For one reason or another, you don't do as much direct. It looks like that caller's back. Hi, you're on there live on KUCI with Cat Albrecht.
Oh, hi. I have a question. In terms of the animal, the dogs that find cats, what is that first encounter like when they find the cat? Do they pick it up? Do they bark at it? Like,
oh, that's a good question. No, they typically, when in training, we use what are called target cats, and these are obnoxiously. obnoxious, friendly cats that love to play with dogs. Every morning, I've got three dogs here at my place, and every morning these cats are conditioned to play with my dogs because before the dogs go outside, they get to nudge the kitty and nibble on the kitty, and the cat will bite and scratch and, you know, play with the dog, and the dogs love it too. And so the dogs that we train, their reward at the end in training is we open the crate that we've created the cat, and they get to play together. Both are in a harness and on a lead. On actual cases, we don't even let the dog go up to the cat. We're just using the dog's nose, and when the dog picks up the scent, they're all wiggly, because certainly the cats we're looking for are panicked and afraid,
right.
Not just of the dog, but of hiding. So initially, we're commanding the dog where to poke its nose and where to sniff, And if the dog is wiggling with excitement, then we use the flashlight, look in there, we back up with the dog and allow the owner to recover the cat.
Oh, that is so cool. You do great work.
Thank you.
It's really wonderful listening to you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call. Okay, Kat, well, in our remaining time, we don't have a lot of time left, so I want to make sure we do spend at least a minute or two talking about the Academy and specifically the Training Academy in Fresno, July 17th through 20th. I mean, what is that? I mean, what happens or what would someone expect to learn or to do during that Academy? And how hard is it to learn some of this stuff?
Well, it's not that difficult. A lot of it is just getting the concepts. A lot of it is going to be focused on talking about the behaviors, both human and animal behaviors that keep lost pets from being returned home. But this would be this is a missing animal response technician 1 class. It's teaching you the basics of the science of finding missing dogs and cats. And when you come out of this class, the seminar itself is $500, and it's a 3.5-day course. You come out of that and you're certified to go and start looking for dogs and cats in your area. You won't have a dog yet to go out, but you'll also learn the basics of how to start training your dog to look for lost pets so that you can hopefully become certified to do that.
So it sounds like there's sort of graduated steps along the way that...
Then you'll be able to go home and start training your dog, and I'll be coming out with 3 booklets this year. That there'll be a companion dog training seminar, but you won't be required to go through that. You're only required to go through the MarTech 1 class, and then you can always have your dog certified at a later, once your dog is trained up, then you can have it pay to have it certified, because we're going to have to bring your dog here to Fresno or bring us down there to do the actual certification test. But then once you're certified, you can go out and start charging a fee, or you can do like our nonprofit is doing. We use this as a tool to raise donations for our organization.
Mm-hmm.
That we've had interest from pet sitters, vet techs, dog trainers to do this as a side business, and from nonprofits to do it as a fundraising tool.
Sure, and again, people can learn more about the Academy and some of the other details by, again, visiting the website pethunters.com. And on a related note, when I was just sort of spending some time on the website this weekend, I was really, I mean, you've already kind of alluded to this, but I was really surprised to find that, like, there's 1, I think, in Southern California only person that you list that is even really qualified to do this. And even there, it sounds like she works in a fairly limited area.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just incredible that this hasn't taken off. I mean, I really had believed that once my book came out, and I mean, it came out in hardback in 2004, and I really thought the doors were just going to fly open with funding and with not only funding for the organization, but that opportunities and the training and everything. And again, I've just been hit with setbacks, and I've lost hope at times, but I'm back to the point where I'm actually now, just 2 weeks ago, we're actively looking for missing pets here only in the Fresno area, but we've launched our team. We've only got 3 dogs that are actively working cases right now here, but we're out looking for lost pets, and we've got a possible reality TV series that may be in development, so
cool.
That would probably be another year or so. But
yeah, but that, I mean, as much as I think we all have sort of mixed feelings about reality TV series, I mean, that's something that, like the book and hopefully a conversation like this, because the thing is, there's so much great information that, you know, when people are in agony when their dog or cat or other animal goes missing, and there's some really, I don't know if it's simple things, but there's some really kind of consistent things that if you know that world the way you obviously do, and even just reading the book and preparing for this, like, oh my God, I mean, I made the classic mistakes when our cat went missing.
Yeah.
And so I just think that people would be so well served to just know more and more, whether they want to become certified or whatever they want to do, but just any more information is just going to be so helpful.
Well, there are 3 websites I want to mention. The
sure.
first, we've kept plugging the pethunters.com.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Pet Detective Training Academy, so there's information if you want to be trained. That's the website to go there. If you've ever lost a pet, you need to go to lostapet.org. That is the Missing Pet Partnership, the nonprofit organization, and the focus there is going to be to educate animal shelter workers and rescue groups and develop education and training materials on a national level, but it's also a site for tips on how to find your lost pet. And the third one is just my website, katalbrecht.com, and it's cat with a K, and you could just Google K-A-T plus Pet Detective and find it. But that has my book, and it features my dogs and cats, and it's just kind of an update on on how to follow what I've been doing. And I have an e-newsletter called Scent Detectives that you can sign up for and keep updated on what we're doing.
Very cool. All really great information. And we have maybe like 1 minute left or less. And so I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, how does Ace Ventura fit into all this? I mean, you know, has that been sort of a thorn in your side? Has it helped in any way? I mean, is it,
You know, I mean, I love Jim Carrey. But, you know, I mean, of course, I'm always compared to that, and I've just gotten used to it, and mm-hmm. you know, it used to really upset me.
Yeah,
it
yeah.
really did. But, you know, I mean, it's actually, I don't know. I don't know what to say except that people, when they think of veterinarians, they don't think, oh, Dr. Doolittle is going to take care of my animal. But, you know, yet I get the bad rap because of, you know, because of a cheesy movie. Well, okay, because of a cute movie.
Right.
But, you know, I'm just doing what I'm doing, and I'm not going to give up in spite of the fact that many times I want to, but I would never be able to live with myself. I could never look at another lost pet poster if I gave up knowing I had a chance to make a difference.
Right, absolutely.
You know? And I know that the volunteers, that the funding, that my Pet Detective Academy will take off at some point, and I just have to trust that God's going to make that happen, and I'm just here to do what I'm going to do.
Well, and look at, again, what you've been through and all the sort of roadblocks and people, you know, either dismissing you or, you know, worse, and you're plugging away, and it's working, and it's just, you know, it's just going to take some time, but it's a really important effort, and we really, really appreciate your time and all your efforts already and joining us today on Talking Animals.
Thank you so much.
All right, Kat, thank you so much. Again, it's Kat Albrecht. The book is The Lost Pet Chronicles. Websites include pethunters.com, lostapet.org, and katalbrecht.com. Thanks again, Kat.
Thank you, Duncan. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye. All right. That's the scoop on Kat Albrecht, and it's really some pretty interesting stuff if you want to check out any of those websites. I'm Duncan Stress. You're listening to Talking Animals on KUCI and Irvine 88.9 FM, streaming live on the internet at kuci.org. It's time to play Name That Animal Tune. You know how it works. It's Name That Tune, except it's animal related. So we're not going to belabor that. If you can identify this tune, it's animal related in some way, call us up 949-824-5824. First person who does so would get a choice of those prizes we mentioned earlier. It's Name an Animal Tune. I'm Talking Animals here on KUCI.
Can't see no future. Can't see no sky. Can't see no sky. My feet are so heavy. So is my head.
Can you name this animal tune? You still got time. Call up 949-824-5824 if you can. Meanwhile, we've just about reached the end of this week's edition of Talking Animals. I'm Duncan Strauss. I want to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on the show are not necessarily those of KUCI, UCI, the University of California Board of Regents. I want to again thank our guest, Kat Albrecht. One last time, the book is The Lost Pet Chronicles. Websites are pethunters.com, lostapet.org, katalbrecht.com. And all really cool. The book's really an interesting, fun read. And, you know, who knows? Maybe you might want to sign up for that seminar in July in Fresno. Also want to thank you all for listening and for the phone call we received. I hope you'll join us next Monday, May 30th, when our guest will be Kinky Friedman, the singer-songwriter who fronted his band, the Texas Jew Boys, toured in the 70s with Bob Dylan's Rolling Thunder Review. More recently, he's worked as a prolific mystery novelist and is now running for governor of Texas. He's also the founder of Utopia Animal Rescue Ranch, and one of his passion for animals is carried over really into his gubernatorial bid. One key plank of his campaign platform is his opposition to decline cats. So that's Kinky Friedman, sure to be a memorable guest on Memorial Day next Monday, May 30th. Want to thank Jim, our intern. Thanks, Jim.
Are you welcome, Duncan.
Any parting shots, comments as we wrap things up here?
Well, your interview with Kat was pretty interesting. I was actually interested in learning about different types of pet detective methods. Is that? Thank you very much for having me in here.
Absolutely. Thank you, Jim, and good luck. What kind of show are you hoping to do here at KUCI when the time comes?
Well, being a pre-med, I'm interested in something to some type of show that would inform my peers, other bio majors as well as pre-meds. about the admissions process with medical schools, as well as informing them about different issues within health and medicine.
Cool. Great. Well, we'll look forward to that. That's Jim. Stay tuned for him. Hopefully this summer, I guess, even.
Hopefully.
Or fall. Yeah. Cool. Other great public affairs show here on KCI include just today alone, the Serena Sharp Show, which, of course, precedes Talk Animals. Then at 5 p.m., we offer Counterspin, followed at 5:30 by Planetary Radio with Matt Kaplan. And that's just Monday, folks. There's great public affairs programming and talk shows like this each weekday, 8 to 9 and 9 to 10 in the morning. Then, again, from 5 to 6 in the afternoon. So check those out. I want to urge you to check out also our website, talkanimals.net. And when you get there, please sign up for our email list. We can alert you to guest bookings and other events and announcements. I also encourage you to email me with any comments, guest suggestions, ideas about show topics, songs, comedy bits, news stories, and anything else you'd like to pass along to talkinganimals@AOL.com. I really look forward to hearing from you. No, seriously, I do. Please stay tuned for Jeff Scott and the Blues Disease, his great, great, great blues show here on KCI, riding right on the heels of the Doheny Blues Festival. I'm sure he's going to have plenty of cool things to say and play in that way. So stay tuned again for him coming up momentarily here on KUCI. I'm Duncan Strauss. It's 88.9 FM KUCI in Irvine. Thanks very much for listening. Have a good week. Be kind to animals. Be kind to others. Be kind to yourself. And as always, we're closing things out here with an animal-related tune. This is the original Sinners with a raw rockin' song called Birds and Bees on KUCI. We'll catch you next week on Talking Animals.
Love.